This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It's the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs, and with me in the studio today is Lim Soo Ann. So on today's episode, we're going to be revisiting some of the best Daily Digest episodes that we've done over the year. It's only been a year that we've been doing this show, but what are we going to start off with, Soo Ann?
So we're starting off with black holes and asteroids and the possibility of extraterrestrial life while we look back at some of the biggest and brightest news relating to space and astronomy that grabbed headlines this year. Well, a lot happened over our heads this decade. NASA and other space agencies have pulled off an array of daring missions exploring exotic bodies from icy moons to dwarf planets. Astrophysicists tuned into the gravitational rumblings of the cosmos to find a new way to study black holes. And private companies like SpaceX continue to lead the charge to open up space and beyond to private customers. And of course, this year, none of these trends really seem to be slowing down.
Yeah, there's no shortage of astronomy news as well that grabbed headlines this year, and we've covered several of these here on the Daily Digest throughout the year, and we're going to be revisiting some of these as well, but briefly touching on other news that we didn't get a chance to cover.
So let's dive straight into it. So first up is what is possibly the biggest space news of the year, where scientists took the first ever picture of a black hole, and it was truly supermassive. So it measured 40 billion kilometers across, and that's actually 3 million times the size of the Earth.
Yeah, and that image was captured by the Event Horizon Telescope, which is made up of 8 radio telescopes in locations from Antarctica to Spain and Chile. And to be accurate, it isn't exactly an image of the black hole, but rather an image of its shadow.
That's right. And when the news broke, our colleague Tishawik spoke to Dr. Kevin Koi Jun Yee. He's a Malaysian astrophysicist who was involved in the Event Horizon Telescope collaboration. And here is he explaining how the image was taken and put together from the moment that the 8 telescopes took the images back in April 2017.
So after the observations, of course, the first thing that had to be done was to ship the data to a central location to process. So from all these telescopes, it generated about like a few petabytes of data. That's like a few thousand terabytes of data. Mm-hmm. And there's too much data to actually transfer it through the internet. So we had to ship the disks to the MIT in Boston and also to the Max Planck Institute in Germany, where there are supercomputers where they can sort of combine all these data from the different telescopes. Of course, for the South Pole, they had to wait longer until September, October, because in winter, you know, there are no flights leaving Antarctica. So they had to wait to October before the data could be shipped there. So once, you know, all the data were there in the two locations, you know, they processed, calibrated the data. I mean, sort of taking out a lot of atmospheric effects, because these telescopes are all around the Earth, right? And the atmosphere above these different telescopes are different because the Earth is rotating and all this. So we need to correct for all these small detail differences in the data. And then, of course, we took many months just to check the quality of the data. You know, if we find any errors, we have to go back and do everything again. And I think we did that like over a few rounds. Mm-hmm. So that took us like just about 1 year just to, you know, process the data and calibrate the data. And in the meantime, we have to develop, you know, new tools and software as well, because we found that, you know, some of the existing astronomy software that we had was inadequate to handle this kind of unique data from the EHT. And of course, once we're satisfied, we start making the images. And to do that, we first divided ourselves into like 4 independent teams. And each team will make our own image, and there was to be no communication between the different teams, so that we try to avoid like human bias. You know? And like about a month later, we started comparing our images, and then we see that, okay, all our images are consistent. So we have the higher confidence that what we are seeing is, you know, not something we are making up ourselves.
And why is this image, or why is the understanding of how black holes work significant for our understanding of the universe?
So for a long time, scientists, we have believed that, you know, black holes exist. But most of this is true indirect evidence. You know, we see the orbits of stars around the center of galaxies. And I think a few 2 years ago, there was this big news about the detection of gravitational waves, where, you know, this was released when 2 black holes collided and the gravity group detected that. But now, you know, we actually, for the first time, have direct visual evidence that black holes exist and they are real, you know, so we can, you know, people like to say seeing is believing. Like. And, you know, again, after more than 100 years since Einstein came up with his theory of general relativity. We still haven't managed to prove him wrong, you know. His theory still holds up, you know, even at the most extreme region in the universe, you know, where the gravity is the strongest. Of course, it would have been even more groundbreaking if he had shown Einstein to be wrong, but, you know, I think it just shows that Einstein is still right as far as we can tell.
And keeping up with the theme of black holes is not just supermassive ones that made the news, but also what could be the smallest black holes ever. So when stars die, collapse and explode, they can either form a neutron star or a black hole which would be larger than the star. And there are four different classifications of black holes, from the smallest, which are primordial mass black holes, to stellar mass and then intermediate mass, and what we just mentioned, supermassive black holes.
So previously, primordial black holes were purely hypothetical. Scientists weren't sure if they existed, and that was until the news was reported back in November. So I spoke to Professor Dr. Chong Hon Yu, who's the president of the Penang Astronomical Society, and here's a clip of him on why this was an exciting discovery.
Now, what makes the astronomers very excited is it doesn't give out any radiation, this black hole.
Mm-hmm.
Because according to a big discovery by Professor Hawking, now, the discovery was made in the 1970s, that black holes do give off light. Light meaning X-rays, the famous Hawking radiation. Because previously, before 1970s, people said, yes, black holes exist, but no point looking for them because not even light can escape. So they are there, but you cannot see. But also Hawking proved that you can see black holes, because as matter goes around the black holes, before they go in, they will give off X-rays, the famous Hawking radiation.
Mm-hmm.
So they were looking for this Hawking radiation around this newly discovered type of black hole. They couldn't see the Hawking radiation. So the hypothesis is that this small black hole is orbiting very far away from the red giant star, and the material from the red giant star is not pulled into the black hole and give off Hawking radiation. So it's an inactive black hole orbiting around a red giant star. So it's very interesting. If it's true, that means they've discovered a new class of black holes. That is, more than that of a neutron star, less than that of a stellar black hole.
And on that fascinating note, we'll move on from black holes to meteorites. So also in November, a group of researchers from Japan and the US discovered the presence of ribose and other bioessential sugars in two of the three meteorites that they were studying. So they explained that ribose is a crucial component of ribonucleic acid, also known as RNA, and that's essential for the regulation and expression of genes in humans.
So Sumitra Selvaraj spoke to astrobiologist Dr. Kuhan Chandru about this sweet news, and here he is explaining how these sugars traveled in the meteorites.
First of all, they are formed during these meteorites. They come from anything which lands on Earth is called a meteorite. So they are coming from this asteroid belt, carbonaceous chondrites, the stones and all these things. So these things are actually formed during the formation of the solar system, actually.
Mm.
So kind of robust, actually, thinking about it now. So they are formed, not only the sugars, a lot of other chemicals are also formed, which is used in biology, but most of it is not used in biology at all, actually. So it's a very small subset of this chemistry which is happening in this particular point. They are not actually... Well, if you heat them up directly, yes, they'll decompose. But then there is this whole process which is happening actually in space, especially during the formation of the solar system. They form a stone and then they somehow escape the asteroid belt and hit Earth. And that's how you get your meteorites. I think it's not that difficult to survive that, I assume.
Okay, so they've traveled Earth and then now they've hit the surface of Earth, right? How did that actually contribute to perhaps the origins of life?
Okay, there's like three questions to unpack there, right? So the first thing is that most of the origins of life study on Earth, so what they do is they simulate what was Earth like 4.5 million years ago or 4 billion years ago. They simulate this in lab and then they do experiments to mimic in different pH, temperature condition and with basic gases. Turns out that you can find some of these biomolecules, I would call this actually, one of which is being the sugar ribosium. So this is how people speculate origins of life. So far, when you want to compare whether this thing is actually, because it's all lab work and it's, you know, you can expose it to contamination and all these things. So they said, so it's not really 100% proof. But then we know that there is a lot of meteorite impact on Earth. I think we receive about, I can't see the number, but it's in ton. Even now, we receive a lot of material from space. So during that time, there was a lot of stuff coming from space as well. And to say that you have the sugar in that particular meteorite or two of those meteorites is a good thing, actually, because now we know actually there is sugar which is being delivered as well. So that, how it contributes to origins of life is another question, because along with this sugar, you will have a lot of other chemicals and all this will be interplaying with each other. So how this one sugar, you know, joined with the nuclear base, which is the information center for your RNA and DNA, it's a big question as well. So the article doesn't say how this happens. It just says that, okay, we can find the sugar, which is one part of the product of the ingredient of what life uses today.
And some of the other news we covered included the discovery of water in a faraway planet in the constellation of Leo, which could make it the most habitable planet after Earth. So while the Earth is in the habitable zone and could possibly host some life forms we've yet to discover, you'd want to keep in mind that it is about 110 light years away. The gravity is 8 times stronger than Earth, and it receives intense UV rays that would result in cancer-causing mutations.
So not exactly habitable just yet.
Not quite.
So we also celebrated the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 moon landing, and that's when Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin became the first humans to set foot on the moon, and this was back in 1969. So that was an event that was witnessed by hundreds of millions of people around the world. People were riveted to their television screens and radios. And in related to news to the moon landing, this year also saw several new attempts to land on the moon. So this started off in January with China's successful landing of the Chang'e 4 on the moon's far side, which no country had ever done that before. But in April, Bereshit, a lander built by an Israeli non-profit, actually crashed on the moon's surface. And in September as well, India's space agency lost contact with the Vikram lander that was later revealed to have crashed as well.
Yeah, that was quite devastating for India. And one final thing that we'd like to briefly mention was the first ever all-women spacewalk. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of excitement when NASA first scheduled it before it was cancelled, because the space station actually lacked the right spacesuits for the two women. I mean, of all the reasons, right? Mm-hmm. And the space program was criticized as being created by men and for men, but NASA did eventually get the right spacesuits for the women, and history was made on the 18th of October.
So quite a lot of exciting news this year, and this was just a brief look on what happened in astronomy this year. So what I can say is we'll definitely be on the lookout for more updates about space in 2020.
Yes, and we'll definitely be covering that on the Daily Digest. So we're going to take a short break, but here we're going to leave you with Supermassive Black Hole by Muse.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.